You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm your host, Otto Daniolo, and tonight my guest is a colorful character with a long history in the Arizona rock and roll music scene and beyond. Guitarist, singer-songwriter Ryan McKay will be joining me right after I share a song of his with you titled Ms. Sebastian from Mr. Ryan's recently released solo album called Ryan McKay and the Broken Brains here on the Auto D Show. Check it out.
On behalf of us all, we feel your frustration. We rightly deserve your condemnation. We pray you'll come back again, Sebastian. Tell me if I'm spelling it right. On your way to get warmed again, your little friends. On the minimum wage, say you're totally right.
Listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was Ms. Sebastian by Ryan McKay here in the Auto D Show, which is brought to you in part by my good friends at Fervor Records and also by TheRecordingArtist.com, where I cut a new record with a different band every Wednesday night, and you can watch it happen live at TheRecordingArtist.com. In fact, once we're finished, I post the new recording on the website, and then I make a TV show about it called The Recording Artist, which is available on Amazon Prime, on our website, and on Roku by downloading the free Roku TV channel called The Recording Artist. To learn more, or to get your band on the show, or even to become a sponsor of one of the coolest new music shows out there, visit TheRecordingArtist.com. And now, without further delay, let me welcome to the show my guest, Ryan McKay. Hey, Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm great, Otto. Thank you for having me on this show. Well, I'm excited.
Thanks for coming down and welcome. Listen, that tune, Miss Sebastian, that's a cut off of your recently released first solo album.
First one, yeah.
Incredible, incredible track.
Thank you.
Tell me about it. What are you doing on that record?
All the music is me.
So
yeah, everything. I'm playing everything.
You're playing the drums.
Well, I'm programming the drums.
Okay, let's be honest. You programmed the drums. You played the bass.
I played bass.
That bass line is killing.
Thank you. That is my impression of Mel Shocker. You remember Mel Shocker?
Yeah.
Grand Funk Railroad, man.
Yeah, man, I love that band.
Yeah, I don't want to give it away, but it's definitely influenced by Mel Shocker, and all the Grand Funk fans are going to know exactly what song that is.
That's very, very cool. And the arrangement was really, really astute as well, meaning you're aware of recording, the recording process, and the role that each of these pieces have in a song. You left a lot of space and filled a lot of space with some really cool sounds.
Thanks.
And the vocal performance is great.
Wow.
So who's coming singing?
That is me, for better or for worse. But yeah. Coming from you, Otto, that's a great compliment because you're a great producer yourself.
Well, thanks. So it's a great record. I really, really enjoyed that. And that's just one cut. Now, since we're on that song, we should talk a little bit about this record. Because skipping through it, again, it's not all the same, but not all like that. You're not going to find that album to be 10 cuts of that.
Right. It's very eclectic. It's sort of like all over the place, right? And it shows all the different styles of music that I've been involved with for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then a bunch of stuff that I have never done before. And so when I set about to write a solo record, first of all, like, I've never done one. I've been playing music for so long, decades.
Yeah, you've been playing for a long time.
Yeah, and so now it's like, wow, what would a solo record of mine sound like? Because if you go back through the whole catalog, I mean, you had like hard rock and almost heavy metal, and then jazz swing with Louis Prima.
Yeah.
I did 10 years or so. Yeah, I've done an acoustic duo forever. Mm-hmm. So there's all this different stuff, and And it kind of froze me in place for a long, long time as I tried to kind of find, I was looking for like, well, let me find a style.
Mm-hmm.
Let me find what kind of a style this record's going to be. And finally, I settled on whether or not I thought it was a good song.
Yeah.
So I don't care what style it is. Yeah. It's a good song. You know, is it catchy? Does it make sense, you know, on the record in the context of everything?
Yeah, I like that. And there are a lot of different styles on it. It almost seems like it's a thematic story or a soundtrack.
Yeah, so it's called Ryan McKay and the Broken Brains, and what I wanted to do with every song is to kind of discuss a different broken brain, and I talk a lot about myself in these things and what I kind of deal with, from some depression, some anxiety, but there's other things in there like bullying, for example, or that last song we just played was me hearkening back to when I was a teenager and working at like a grocery store, and I worked at a country club as well, and so I'm dealing with what we colloquially know as a Karen now. I don't know if I said that word colloquially. I may have invented it. I don't know.
You slowed down, but it was good. It's like speed bump
word. So unfortunately, I don't think I like the word Karen in there, but yeah. You know, I wouldn't want to put that in and sort of stamp it. And it's kind of not fair to Karens everywhere. But
right.
But when I say that, anyone listening knows exactly what I mean. So right. It's like this entitled person, and you, I never met any more entitled people more than when I worked at 17 years of age as a busboy at a country club.
I bet.
And it was, you know, people shaking their water goblets at me and oh boy, please give me some more water, you know. So I when I look back, I kind of look at it like that, you know. That was kind of the inspiration for the song. And I kind of started banging out some chords on my I have a Fender electric piano, a Rhodes piano. And so that kind of just jumped out, you know.
Now, you've played in a lot of bands. You've played with a lot of musicians. So you've made records with these bands in the past.
Yeah.
So to do a solo record where you're going to play everything, that's a really different approach.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a lot of extra work, but one of the things I learned early was to try to get a workflow together, because the way I work is that I'll come up with an idea, kind of a gist of a song, and then I'll go right into my home studio and start putting it together. And I have guitars at arm's reach. I have MIDI piano stuff, you know, right next to me. So like if I turn to the right, I'm playing piano. If I turn to the left, I'm playing guitar or bass. And then a dead center, I'm working on a drum pattern. So I'm like kind of constantly turning, you know. So anyway, I would expedite these ideas and not fully flesh them out, but kind of put them in a playlist and revisit them as they kind of start piling up, and then figure, okay, well, so that one's working, that one's not working, and so forth. So you kind of get an idea of which ones am I going to go in and really cut real stuff on, you know, like cut real guitars, cut real piano, and that kind of thing.
And you mentioned that as you were going through this process that a song got on the record not because of the style, but because you thought it was a good song.
Right.
Which let you exercise yourself in a number of different ways, and we'll listen to some other ones. But let me ask you this question. Did you feel that you found your style in expressing all of these styles? Is there a song or two that resonated more with, this is where I think I'd go if I put a band together, we do this stuff? Or do you think you did not find a more stylistic identity as an artist?
I would say that I did not. And then what I also realized when I said, hey, what the style is whether or not I think it's a good song. You know, I one of the things I want to do with solo projects, and I want to do them more as time goes on, I want to do another record. You know, I don't want to be sort of bound by a style, because that was the one alluring thing about doing a solo record is you don't have anybody to answer to. So now that could be a double-edged sword, of course, like, you know, but I can do whatever I want. So a lot of this music on here, it's varied because of that experimentation, because I could. Mm-hmm. So in my previous bands, if it was a hard rock band, it's like, it's hard to go in there with the song like Miss Sebastian and go, well, here, check it out, guys. Let me just set up my Rhodes and play this. They would laugh me out of the room, you know.
Yeah, it wouldn't go. Well, I think that, you know, from an artist's point of view, a lot of times artists who are songwriters as well tend to recognize, maybe because of the experience in dealing with record labels, where to market you, we need you to be narrow. You know,
That's
their point of view.
Yeah.
So that after they spend $3 million on the first single, they don't want the next single to be different.
Makes sense.
They want the first beat for the audience to know, oh, that's that guy who did that record.
Right.
So they work on that. And then you can grow. In fact, I think Madonna was probably one of the most successful at growing as fast as you could grow without losing the audience and always gaining another audience as you got older. It's an interesting thing to try to pull off. But like, if you go back farther, before that really existed, you had bands like Led Zeppelin who played everything.
Yeah.
From blues to rock to country to whatever.
Yeah.
They just did it any way they wanted to do it. And that was okay then.
Yeah.
It's just not okay in the industry these days. So
it's just unfortunate, I think.
Yeah, you know, I agree. But I think now that we have the freedom of not having those gatekeepers, you have the freedom. You know, also, since we release things as singles, you have the freedom to do really whatever you want to do.
Exactly. And that was really attractive to me. Because me as an artist, I could push myself into all these different directions. You know, there's a song that has like a reggae feel to it, mm-hmm. which I've never done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really kind of like, can I pull this off? The answer was almost no until I worked at it. And mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, well, here's what's missing is the drum thing's all wrong. Hang, let me get in there and see. You know, so it made me a better producer in some sense, because you're wearing all the different hats, you know. So it's, and producer is probably the number one hat, I guess.
Yeah.
Man, it's tough.
It is. And also that just made me think of another thing. Did you find at times, or did this impact your process for the next record, where you're like, oh, I know, I'm going to hire this guy to do that bit because I know exactly what I need, but rather than me figuring out how to do it just right, I know a guy who can do it.
I probably should, but no, I don't think that's what I want to do. Okay. I think I just want to try to get it all, better or for worse, get it all done by myself and see how close I can get.
Yeah. Well, it becomes an attractive. Educational process for you too. Experiential.
Yeah, yeah. I never stop learning. I want to keep getting better at it. You know, mm-hmm. there's so many things about this album that I've never done before, from that reggae song, from actually mastering my album to vinyl,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just all that stuff. It's like all uncharted waters, which is very exciting and scary at the same time. But and it caused me to drag my feet a lot, you know, because I'm pretty good at procrastinating or just being overly anxious.
Yeah, it's hard to make decisions because every decision you make omits another option.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you don't want to decide because then it's only going to be what you decide.
Yeah.
And for artists, that's really hard to exclude potential.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. That's a good point.
Yeah. And again, this being your first solo record, and you've been in bands, you've done records over the years. You mentioned when we were talking before the show started, the pandemic. I know how that impacted a couple of the things you were involved in, and we'll get to that. But is that when you started writing this record? Because you found yourself
on your own? Yeah, I mean, it essentially was. Although I had kind of got it in my mind that I wanted to do it. Like, I've waited long enough. What happened in the 10 years prior to me starting this record, which would have been in like January 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So, 10 years prior to that, I was on the road with Louis Prima Jr. We did a couple records together, and I was a co-writer along with Louis and a couple other guys in the band, AD and Marco Paulos. So the four of us were kind of like the main songwriters, and we did two records like that. But aside from those co-writes on maybe a total of 8 or 9 songs, I really didn't write anything. I had not written a song in so long that, you know, I just wanted a break. And if we go back a decade prior to that, the reason why I wasn't writing was because that band was very prolific, and that band was called Crash Street Kids, and I did 4 records in about 6 years where I was the primary. And basically, aside from a couple co-writes with A.D. Adams, I wrote every note of that music just about. So by the end of that, I was kind of like ready for a vacation, and the Louis Prima gig was the perfect vacation for me, but I did contribute a little bit. But then by 2020, I think I was like, okay, that's enough time off. You need to get back to work, you know.
Back to work.
Fun, you know.
So Crash Street Kids is kind of like music director role, where you were in charge a lot more creatively about what was going on.
Well, yeah, Crash Street Kids stuff was interesting because it was basically AD and I. AD's the drummer, but he was also like the guy who was in charge of the image and the show, and oftentimes the direction of the storyline that we were presenting, because every record we did was a concept album, all 4 of them. And so then I would kind of go back and also create the story along with AD, but like write all the music and write all the lyrics and sing it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was pretty interesting. And we were both kind of like the producers of the music. It was really like a team effort, like a duo.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us working side by side, and, mm-hmm. and he would produce my vocals, and then, you know.
So was the Louis Prima experience your first, I'm just a side man, I just have to play my guitar?
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
Don't expect more from me than that. I can pitch in.
And I was ready for that because
it's a very different experience.
It is. Yeah, it's much, much more relaxing. Like, yeah. I don't.
Dude, I've never been a sideman until the Brooks and Dunn tribute show, where I just show up and sing, and I'm like, awesome.
Is that all you need me to do?
Yeah. In fact, they gave me a guitar and said, don't learn the songs, because he never plays. He plays 2 chords and quits, so just stand there with the guitar. I said, all right. So yeah. That's really hard to do.
Yeah, but I was definitely ready for it as a lead singer, front man.
Yeah.
And that's the first time ever I'd fronted my own band as a lead singer and guitarist, so... By the time that little whirlwind of Crash Street Kids was over, I was ready to not only just be a sideman, but actually, Louis, if you could just place me behind the curtain, if I could even do that for you. Really, I mean, I'll sit in the dressing room and just give me a monitor inside the dressing room, and
that's awesome.
Chunk chords along with it, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. I watched a video of the band. I guess at this point I should at least say, I know A.D. Adams.
Yeah, I figured.
But let's back up there, too. A.D. has been in a million things I've been involved in as well, including playing my shows where he's been my drummer, is just one little thing. But watching video of him with Louis Prima, and you see him jumping out in front of the drum kit and singing and everything, and it's like, wow. And now you're saying, Louis, all I need to do is sit behind a curtain. I'm thinking, I bet he didn't let you do that.
No. He likes the fact that it's... just a bunch of goofballs jumping around on stage, like the zoo has been let out.
Yeah,
and you know, once you get into the spirit, I mean, the music of Louis Prima, his father, because we played with Louis Prima Jr. Just to be clear, we did his dad's music, and his dad's music is infectious, and you can't. There's no sitting behind the curtain when you're like, oh, and everyone gets along so well, and really just we're funny to each other on stage, and trying to crack each other up, and. You want to get into that. You don't get in on that. You know.
Now, you mentioned earlier, before we went on the air, that you were doing a podcast with AD.
Yes, Shabby Road Record Show.
Which went on for quite a while.
6 years.
6 solid years. That was a weekly?
Weekly.
Yeah.
Which was a bad decision.
Well, it was a big commitment.
That's me and AD, though. I mean, when we get together and do a project, it's like... We have
reels.
A good work ethic. You know, we're not afraid of the work.
Well, I remember the podcast. I had an opportunity to be a guest on your podcast.
Yeah, that episode was called Autocorrect.
Okay, that's right. And it was a cool show. And I was doing a podcast as well. And I loved that you guys had a tip jar on your website and you were getting beer money.
That was a stroke of genius.
It was.
I can't remember if it was me or AD. But I can't believe people actually did it.
I know. I think that, but when you're listening to guys having fun talking about rock and roll records, and they're drinking a beer, and you want to participate, and then you want to thank them, But I mean, all you can do on their website is buy them a 12-pack or buy them a 6-pack.
And that's exactly how it was listed.
Yeah, I think that's just a brilliant idea because that's what they want to give you. They want to have a beer with you. They want to think the next time they're listening that you're drinking one of the cans of beer they bought you.
And it's very true. That happened.
Yeah, I think that was incredibly clever. Really, really cool idea. And then you also mentioned that at that point you'd already been playing with Louis Prima Jr. and The Witness.
Yes.
And there was a huge schedule coming up for 2020.
That's right, yeah.
And that's why was that the primary reason you stopped the podcast?
Yes, it was. Because we were looking down the barrel of about 5 months on the road with Louis Prima. We had just recorded in February of 2020. We finished our work on a Louis Prima record at Capitol Records. Mm-hmm. And that was slated to come out. It's actually not out yet to this day. The label is kind of holding it back until they can really fill the schedule like they want to support the record. And it's unfortunate because I think the record is fantastic. And so people will eventually hear it. But, you know, with the way things are and the way the touring stuff is, it's making it a little difficult for a 10-piece band with horns to get on the road. So we had that. We had recorded that. We were ready. We got all these dates. We're going to be gone. So we kind of looked at each other. And after 6 years, it's like, you know what? I think let's go ahead and take this down and hit the landing gear and put it to bed. It was super fun because there's no way we can continue on. So that's why the podcast ended. Unfortunately,
you had a big final podcast.
We did one called the Farewell Tour, and it was a big tearful. Thank you guys for hanging out. It was a great show. Blah blah blah. Hugging. You know, a big shout out to Liz. She was our producer. Made sure all the controls were still working while me and AD were drinking and playing records. So all of us were together and it was super fun. So now it's like, well, why don't we just get back and do an episode sometime? So we keep threatening to do it, but we just got to get our schedules together.
But back on the ending of it, you thought you were going to be out of town and too busy to be doing it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, boom, the pandemic hits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the dates get canceled.
Everything, like a set of dominoes. I mean, I had kind of gotten a sub in because I wanted to kind of spend more time at home. Looking at a calendar like that, for me, I'm a husband and father of two, and I'm going, that's probably a little bit too much. And I'd never missed a gig, but I'm like, Louis, can I get a sub? He's like, sure, Ryan. No, it's going to be a busy summer, so you guys are going to be gone for 5-6 months. And I remember the very first gig that was canceled because of COVID, I had subbed it out. So I called my guy that was filling in for me just like a couple 3 days before they were set to leave, and I go, hey, you need anything? You got your charts, everything cool, any last minute questions or details? He's like, well, actually, Ryan, the gig's canceled, I guess this COVID thing, you know. And then sure as heck, man, 4 or 5 days later it was there falling like dominoes. Yeah. You know, and that was the end of that, as we all know.
Yeah, and so there you just stopped the podcast, and then we're a month and a half later.
And a month and a half later, we stopped the gigs.
And you're like,
yeah.
Dang.
Yeah,
so now there's nothing to do but the podcast. And you
now it's like really go whole hog into this solo project. Because I had actually wanted to start working on it anyway, and I had even kind of started to learn some new software to kind of get myself ready to start writing again. So then I was given all this extra time. And started writing.
Well, let's play another song off of your debut solo effort.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan McKay and the Broken Brains.
And the Broken Brains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you pick the song. I've got the whole record here. And then we'll come back and talk about a couple of your other projects.
All right. Let's play that reggae one that we talked about. It's called Here Come the Demons.
Okay. Gotcha. Anything about this you want to share that you haven't before we listen?
I mentioned it was kind of like the reggae thing that I think turned out pretty good, and I like the tune. I think it's as a good. It again, it made the cut being a good song, but also what it's about is if you ever woke up in the middle of the night and you can't fall back asleep because your brain's going like a million miles an hour, it's calling back all these memories, be it work or, you know, maybe something you did when you were 12. It doesn't even matter. Like, it's just like going through bang, bang, bang. And it's almost like they're walking through your closet, your door, and going, hey, remember this time? Hey, remember that time you said that horrible thing to that, you know?
And it's like, shut up.
So those are the demons. So when I'm singing Here Come the Demons, that's what the demons are. And then the refrain is like, why would they come for me now? It's like the middle of the night. I got to sleep. What are we doing here, you know?
Interesting. Cool. Let's check it out. Here Come the Demons by Ryan McKay on the Auto D Show. Another really, really cool cut.
Thank you.
Man, I tell you, I was hearing Peter Gabriel meets Don Henley between the melody and the vocal production.
I like both of those guys, so I'll take that.
It's really, if they were trying to do this, you know, it's very interesting.
I like the Telecaster. That's I just picked up a new Telecaster before cutting that, and I think it kind of lived in that Telecaster, and I was beating the crap out of it. You know,
cool.
You really hear it in the little section where it's just all the demons surrounding you, but yeah.
In fact, since you mentioned the Telecaster, let me just ask you a couple of real quick guitar questions. When you go out with Louis Prima Jr. and the Witnesses, you're probably playing big old hollow body with a whammy bar and doing some kind of aggressive kind of not style stuff. But when you're out with Crash Street Kids, is it a Les Paul? Or
it was a Les Paul. Well, actually a Flying V for that band. There you go. Aesthetically, it had
so
to
when
be.
You're, oh, okay. But when you're playing something that's more rock and roll, do you have a favorite guitar?
I've always been most comfortable on a Strat because I started on a Strat as a kid.
Okay.
And then, but I love the sound of a Les Paul. So when I'm doing my rock stuff now, it's like I actually bring both. And mm-hmm. so I kind of can switch back and forth between, depending on the song, because they each have their own character.
Oh, yeah.
So like I'll switch them depending on what song is being played.
And you mentioned the Telecaster on that track. Is that is this the first time you've had a Tele?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you like that?
I love it. I can't believe how much I like it.
I know, me too.
It's so fun.
I know. It's all I play now.
It's about as simple of a guitar as you could possibly make.
You know, it really is. And when you stick it in a Fender amp,
yeah,
it has a sound that's... I'm not saying it beats everything out there, but I'm saying it's an undeniable thing once you put those together.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I'm a huge, huge fan. So that's very, very cool. So let's get into some of the other bands just a little bit. We mentioned the Crash Street Kids. So... What year did that band start?
That band ran from about 2004 to 2012-ish. Okay. I think the last album might be 2010, and then we kind of played a few more shows, but really became inactive around 2012, 2013.
Okay. And you mentioned that was where you and A.D. Adams were kind of the two guys in charge of that show.
Yeah, we had two killer musicians with us, Ricky Serrano on guitar, and then Ryan Gregory on bass, but since I'm called Ryan, he's called Ryan number two, so we called him Deuce. So his nickname on stage was Deuce. So really talented younger guys. They were all like 10 years younger than us.
Yeah, well, I imagine. I mean, Ricky still seems like a young guy to me.
He does.
So, you know, he had to be a child.
Yeah, I know.
And Ricky's an incredible guitar player. That was what a great, great guy to have in the band, too.
Yeah.
So was that the first project or first time you worked with AD, or how long had you known AD?
It pretty much was the first project that we did together. We might have played some gigs and stuff together. We'd done some like local bar gigs and things like that. And we decided to kind of put some gear together and create a studio at AD's place, because he rents his own space where he does his drum lessons and, mm-hmm. and stuff. But he had like some recording equipment, and I'm like, well, I've got some recording equipment. Why don't we combine them, you know, and put them together? And now we've got a 16 track, you know, recording thing. So Crash Street Kids was kind of born from that.
Okay. So it started really as you guys were putting together a little recording space too.
Yeah. I mean, we'd kind of run through the paces of that recording gear with another project. It was actually really started as a demo project for me, because I my previous rock band did have like this contact at Elektra Records, and they would actually entertain our demos, and I kind of wanted to write a few songs and see if they would entertain those. So that's kind of what got me in with AD. I think he's like, this kid's got like some deal with Elektra. Lucky, of course I'm gonna rock with this guy.
Yeah.
Of course it never materialized whatsoever, or even came close.
Surprise. No, I know, man. It's crazy business. Crazy business. And you know what's funny too, is you go back to the record companies and the relationships between the labels and the artists. It's so many of the record deals he actually had what they called, you know, the one man clause, or whatever the title was for, I'm forgetting right now, but when that guy left the company, the contract became null and void.
Yes, yeah.
Because you wouldn't work with the label unless it was that guy, because he signed you.
Yeah, and they were turning him over so quickly, so many bands.
So your contact that loved you, that had the power, could be gone before the demo ever got approved or not, and it was just, no one else gave
or in some cases, the album.
Yeah.
The album was done.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Gosh.
Oh, man, there's so many stories there, too. But is that the first time you worked with Ricky? It probably was.
Yeah, that was the first time I worked with either Ricky or Deuce.
Mm-hmm. Very, very cool. And you also have a new, I think this project's fairly new, the Atomic Kings.
Atomic Kings, yeah. So that band is me and Greg Chason, who was in a group called Badlands in the late 80s, early 90s. And then Jimmy Taft on drums, Ken Ronk, who's been around the Valley for a long, long time.
Ken's is a cool
the singer.
Guy.
Yeah, I love
good
Ken.
Good singer, good front guy.
So, yeah, so me and, you know, I work with Greg at Bizarre Guitar, and so that kind of happened around COVID. Even going back before that, Greg and I were working together in a different project. And so then we moved on to Atomic Kings, kind of rebranded everything and did it. And now it's Atomic Kings. And that stuff is when Greg found, like, reached out to me, he had to get my number from, I think it was AD, because he was calling around because he was looking for a guitar player, but he really wanted this 1970s vibe. And he's like sort of talking to AD and going, you know, I just can't find anybody in here. The only guy I ever remember was like years ago playing at Joe's Grotto. It was this blonde haired guy that played a Strat. He could sing. Yeah, I don't know. He played with Scotty Hammonds and them guys. And AD's like, Ryan McKay? Yeah, do you know him? We've worked together for 20 years. Can I get his number? Sure.
Let's call him right now.
So, yeah, Greg called me up and basically said if I'd be interested in coming down. He's like, and I want you to play guitar solos, and there's going to be a lot of guitar solos. And honestly, that intrigued me because there isn't anything in my catalog of crap that I've done that was really guitar focused. So I was attracted to the whole gig because I'm like, yeah, this poor guitar doesn't really get a lot of attention. I mean, if you just heard the solo stuff, there's guitar in it, of course, sure. But it's not like a solo instrument. Matter of fact, there's on the Broken Brains album, there's only one proper guitar solo on the whole record.
Yeah.
So it's not a guitar centric record. It's a singer-songwriter album, or it's just a weird producer album. Mm-hmm. So Atomic Kings gets me over to the other side of things where I just focus on guitar, not unlike the Louis Prima thing, but this is like big guitar solos. Really got to practice your guitar, Ryan. So you got to buckle down and I could be creative with the guitar. And it's more of a 70s rock thing where the solos are lengthy and interesting. And
so when did this project start?
Well, it started in 2021, was it? I think it was, yeah, it hasn't been around that long, the four of us. But we, like I said, Greg and I kind of worked, he had another project and I kind of did some demos with him and came down to a studio and cut some tracks and things like that. So our relationship goes back further than that. But really proper Atomic Kings is around 2021 where we started to all of us write songs and put them all together.
So for a couple of years, you've had this focus now of guitar-oriented point of view.
Well, it's like the best of both worlds. There's times when I work with Atomic Kings and my focus is on Atomic Kings and getting all my solos together or writing riffs for the band. And then when I got tired of that, I'd go back over to the Broken Brains material and do that. When I got stuck on something or frustrated with myself for not doing as good as I think I should be doing on the Broken Brains, well, let's go back over to Atomic Kings for a while. So I could kind of, it's very fortunate position to be in because I can kind of take breaks from each of them. You know, but yeah, I focus on all of them the time.
I find the role as you've described it for Atomic Kings interesting. I feel like that it's easier to pick the guitar when you know the rhythm part you're going to play or the song you're going to play. It's kind of like the guitar. Mm-hmm. You know which guitar it's going to be.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, you're right. You don't have to try things out. I just get the impression with your role in Atomic Kings that it's more like you don't know which guitar to grab. You don't know which sound to make, and so you really are exercising a little more to kind of find that. That's just
in Atomic Kings, yeah. Well, I mean, it's either going to be a Gibson something or a Fender something. There's like two or three songs on the record that's definitely the Stratocaster, and just kind of because it's a guitar thing, and guitar was my first love when I was like 13. You know,
who were the first players that really inspired you?
Well, man. I was a big Kiss fan growing up, but those are Gibsons. But Ace Frehley was big. Loved Jimmy Page, the usual suspects. But then there's guys that come along that really kind of like turn you around. Because when I was just starting to play guitar, it was the late 80s, and all the shredders were around. So you had like, you know, Joe Satriani and Steve Vai and all these guys that were just like killing it, right? And mm-hmm. the fast and furious fingers of Vito Bratta from White Lion and all this. So I just was like so intimidated because I was like 13 or whatever, yeah. You know, and I was like, I can never. But my my older brother Kevin brought home Momentary Lapse of Reason by Pink Floyd, which is the 80s era Pink Floyd. But I'd heard the name Pink Floyd, but I didn't really know the music. And I remember I was like, Kevin, can I borrow, you know, that record or CD at the time. And I put on the CD. The very first thing you hear is something called Signs of Life, which is like this very moody instrumental thing. And I'm listening to that going, well, this is weird. Okay, this is not like, you know, Black Sabbath or Wasp or anything. So, but then I hear David Gilmour's guitar playing, and it just absolutely floored me. I mean, like, just like, what is that? I got chills up and down my spine and all my hairs of my arms standing up, and I'm like, oh my God. And I thought, I can do that. I can play that slow.
Yeah, exactly.
And it really just changed, like, just I instantly changed on a dime. Like what I, because I wasn't going to bop around in spandex with big hair and just play as fast as I could. I knew I would never be good at that.
Well, you could never catch up with everybody.
Exactly.
How could you beat the guy who's best at that already?
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to be the slowest guitar player in town. I think that's what my gut, that's the only chance I had. So that really spun me for a loop. And then I found some other kind of lesser known guys. Like I love Uli John Roth from the Scorpions. I love Robin Trower was a big one for me.
Yeah.
I remember hearing Bridge of Sighs for the first time, and it sort of married this bluesy thing with that Pink Floyd deal. Like if you listen to Bridge of Sighs, like almost could have been a Pink Floyd song, or at least the vibe is there. And so I really loved Trower. He became like my guy for a long time. So yeah, all that stuff was influential to me.
The one guitar player I remember, I think maybe, I can't say made a huge impact, because if anything, he made me put my guitar down or look away from him.
Yeah.
Was Jeff Beck, because when he played, I was like, is that really a guitar?
mean, no kidding.
You had to listen again and go, how is he doing that? Let me see. Wow, he's actually doing that with a guitar. And I'm like,
yeah.
Nope, I'm not going to do that.
Like, yeah, amazing.
That's against the rules. Whatever he's doing
amazing.
Is not guitar playing, and stop that.
Yeah.
don't make us go there.
Yeah, there's a Jeff Beck lick that I totally stole for an Atomic King song.
Oh, cool.
It's All I Want, actually.
Cool. Oh,
I think,
really?
It's, well, in, I think it's in there, I've yeah.
Because that is actually a single. Is that out right now, or is it coming out?
The album is coming out May 3rd on Tonehouse Records.
Okay.
Atomic Kings.
Are we able to play that first single, even though it's not?
Yeah, yeah. We got the thumbs up from Jason over at the label, Tonehouse.
Fantastic. So let's go ahead and drop that track. Is it All I Want or All I Wanted?
All I Want.
All I Want.
And then listen for the Jeff Beck lick in the guitar solo.
That's right. And then the call in, I'll give you the number and tell us what minute and second it was. We actually could do that. People could call in. But so on this tune, who was all playing in the band? Just band members on the record?
Just us. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. It'd be me and Greg and Jimmy and Ken.
Cool. So this is the Atomic Kings, a new project, partly from Ryan McKay here on the Auto D Show.
A quarter
check
of me.
Check it out. Yeah.
You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was All I Want from the Atomic Kings and my guest Ryan McKay here on the Auto D Show. Hey, who played the harmonica on the end?
That's Ken.
Oh. Didn't hear you, sorry.
That's Ken.
Really? I didn't know he played harmonica.
Yeah, he plays a killer harmonica, don't he?
Dang, you learned something new about somebody.
Yeah. Time. So that's I air guitared the Jeff Becklick. I don't know if you saw
me. Yeah, I did. I saw it. I don't know if anybody heard you.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's another cool track. So has this band got some gigs lined up? You going to tour behind that record? Or?
Well, not tour, but like we've got a few things that we got coming up. And we got our release party coming up. May 27th is where that is, and I got to look up where it is. But
well, if somebody wants to know, what's the best way to find that?
Just find Atomic Kings on Facebook is okay. Really where it's the most active.
Yeah. Okay, and in terms of finding you, do you have any?
Yeah, come see all the solo record over on my Bandcamp page. That's Ryan McKay Music, RyanMckayMusic. .bandcamp.com. And also you can find me the same thing, Ryan McKay Music on YouTube, where I break down every song on the Broken Brains and do quick little 3 to 4 minute videos on everything. You see me actually playing the guitars and playing the pianos and stuff. So there's all kinds of behind the scenes footage, and I just do a voiceover talking about the song's construction, the inspiration for the song, pop in some lyrics, almost like a lyric video at times. So it's a really cool channel. So come over and subscribe, because there's more to come.
Did you run all those cameras during and get that footage while you were tracking the record, or
no.
Is this something? So after the fact, you kind of
yeah. So after the songs were there, actually, some of the footage isn't exactly matching up with the song, because like my wife would pop in, because I would tell her like, hey, I'm gonna be done here. I'm pretty much wrapping up, but if you want to pop in, I've still got a few loose ends to do. Pop in and shoot the.
Our poor
and
wives.
I can't even remember what songs they actually were, but it's just her popping in and going, here you go, or whatever. Yeah.
anything you can do to help, honey.
Yes.
Yeah,
well, the whole family, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because she's obviously a good inspiration for me and keeping me on my toes and busy, mm-hmm. like, you know, and helping out with social media stuff, video stuff. And but my kids are involved as well. My daughter did the artwork for the album.
Oh, cool.
She's
a
very talented artist. She's a senior in high school, is getting ready to graduate right now as we speak. So she did some tremendous artwork. We created this character we call Brian. And so I would give her directives like, put Brian in an airplane looking terrified, put Brian, and she would just go to town. She's very creative. And then my son Alex is the one, when the artwork was completed, he's the one laying it out in the PDF files for the pressing plant to get the record made. He did the record labels and the logo for Alley Works Records, which is our little record label that we created. That's Alex doing all that. He laid out all the lyric sheet. There's a printed lyric sheet. That's Alex going to town, and he's a freshman in high school.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
I was
going to
ask you about the kids, so that worked out really well.
Yeah. So they've been a great team, and then they'll jump in on some gang vocals too, of course.
Oh, will they?
Yes.
Do they like that?
Yeah. No. But
here, kids, grab the tambourine. Come on, Dad. No, want your allowance? Grab the tambourine.
Please, Dad. No.
Yeah, that's funny. Do they dig the music?
Yeah, you know,
it's not what they listen to.
It's not their thing. It's interesting, because it's so ubiquitous, because as the record was nearing completion, they got to hear it a lot, because I'm mixing it and I'm mastering it and I'm bouncing it down. Now we got to go over here to this stereo and listen to it. So that final month of stuff, you know, they heard a lot of it. So they kind of got to know it more. I was very private before. Like they didn't hear it, because I do a lot of stuff on headphones and when they're not home.
Right.
So, yeah, the first time they actually heard it proper is probably in the mixing stuff, you know.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. They must have felt like, wow, Dad's kind of like, he's really like a rock star guy.
Dad's a giant dork still to them. Yeah.
Dad's still a giant dork.
Yes.
Cool, man. Well, listen, besides Atomic Kings, do you have any other shows coming up?
Not really. I mean,
is there going to be a solo record release party with the band?
I did one. The record actually came out February 1st.
Oh, okay.
I did one a week or so after that. And
so I guess I haven't been paying attention, have I?
No, it's okay. No, it was pretty fun. I plan on doing more of those. I just don't have anything kind of scheduled right now. Everything's Atomic Kings, because our record's coming out. So I'm going to focus on them for a while. But I'd like to do more, because I had a lot of fun doing my own quick set of all original material on acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
And I was able to pull Crash Street Kid songs out, and I pulled out some other nuggets from even earlier than that. So yeah. That no one's heard. So it's like a set of my music. So yeah, it was really fun to do.
You know, it's a lot of fun doing covers because you fill the house when you're a band just playing yeah. songs, you know, and then you want to go do your originals. It's a very different feeling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When I put a band together to play my stuff, I can sell about 30 tickets at $10, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
It's, but I pay guys, try to pay them $300 a piece. So I'm usually out about $1,800.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so, I just did it acoustic because I kind of didn't want to, yeah, I kind of saw that happening. Like,
can't afford to do your own shows.
And you want to pay the guys, you know, because they, you know, you got to get
it's
really good players.
It's a lot of work, especially if they're learning your material. It's not like they've heard it their whole life. They actually have to, you know, it's not like a cover band. They actually have to pick it up out of nowhere. Cool, man. Well, listen, congrats on the solo record. I think it's awesome. And Atomic King's coming up as well. So that's going to be another really cool release.
Yeah.
And so you got a lot going on.
Thanks, man. Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the opportunity to talk about it.
You know, Ryan, it's been a long time. We haven't seen each other for a while. Since probably the Shabby Road podcast.
Oh, it can't be that long.
I don't know. Unless I ran into you out and about, which I don't do much.
I don't either. So maybe that was it. Shabby Road Record Show, autocorrect.
It's
go look
back.
It up.
It's coming back.
It's, I'll All tell
right,
you,
my friend.
Reunion.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, man.
Take care. And you've been listening to the Auto D Show, where my guest has been Ryan McKay. We will see you again next week.